Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Literary Weapons Podcast. I'm Joshua.
I'm Land.
We have a guest host, Land, today. Land, are you drinking a wine?
Not drinking wine.
What are you drinking?
You take a gander?
A Modelo? Oh, God.
I mean, I've been drinking for a little bit.
Okay, well, I'm drinking
I should have gotten wine.
Prophecy, a Cabernet Sauvignon from California. It is very fruity. It's like a very like sweet and fruity cab, and I don't know if I like it.
Where in California is it from?
It just says California.
You say Lodi, I will not drink it.
I don't know. It's this saying has notes of fresh blackberry, plum, and vanilla. It's more than notes of blackberry and plum. It is very strong blackberry and plum.
Well, the thing about the reason why I say Lodi, I don't know if you, well, here's how I was explained about Lodi and California wines. So
Yeah.
Lodi is like the Beauregard to Auburn.
From like Napa.
Yeah. Or even worse, really. Well, no, it's not worse, but it's like that.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I don't
I mean,
know.
don't get me wrong, there's a lot of them I like, but at the same time though, I'm not a wine snob or anything, but
I'm not a wine snob either, but I know that there's certain places in California that I know I really like. Like the
most Napas I like.
I like Napa. I like the Russian River Valley. That's where the Juggernaut,
I wasn't a fan of Juggernaut.
really, so that's my go-to.
Wasn't my favorite. It wasn't bad. I drank it with a steak one night. It was pretty good. I mean, it
Yeah, I
wasn't.
think it is a very good steak wine. Like, I wouldn't get it at like a 5-star restaurant with my steak,
No,
but
yeah.
like if you're just having a steak on a Thursday night, I like it.
Yeah,
Eh.
maybe we'll see. I might try it again. Maybe I just had a bad experience with
I think you did.
it. Maybe because everyone
So
else says they loved it, so
yeah, you should try it again. But what we're actually talking about today is Dune, the book and both movies, because we just watched Dune Part 2 last night, and I think this is going to be coming out tomorrow because I don't have a very good time management deal, so it's going to be a timely episode, like Joe and them talk about that they never do.
what?
All of our episodes are timely because we do them the day before.
Okay. I didn't
Can
want to go off on a tangent. I felt like we were starting to go off on a tangent like them too there for a second. I was like, all right, maybe we need to kind of stop.
we well, because there's gonna be a lot of tangents. Like, this is gonna be a tangent heavy episode
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
already. So I want we gotta get into it, and then we can dive off.
Okay, all right.
So yeah, we're gonna be talking about Dune. We're gonna start out with a little bit about the book. I just reread the book. Then we're going to talk about the first movie and then part two, and then kind of comparisons between all of them. So, starting off with the book, I was just going to say, from rereading the book, I see a lot more like, you know how everyone says, like, oh, it influenced Star Wars and all the stuff, like
Yeah.
all like every sci-fi movie to come out in the last like 50 years is because of Dune. I see it a lot more
Well, no,
now.
I did see it a lot. I mean, I know we're gonna get to this, but I mean, I saw it a lot in the second movie.
Yeah.
Like in the movie, I saw it where it seemed like it was going a Star Wars direction. If that makes or
Wait.
like, but like, star I get like Star Wars was based off of Dune, but.
Yeah, I mean, because George Lucas thought Dune was his favorite book when he was a kid.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of what I was thinking about that last night after we watched it. It looked like a, it well, it didn't look like, but like it was kind of going in that direction, kind of.
Yeah, and so one thing that the movie didn't really touch on, but the book did, was Paul, like, once he ascends to like his all-knowing state. You know how he can see like all of his ancestors through the past and like talk to them and get guidance from them? And how like all of the Reverend Mothers can do that, how they can see and talk to everyone from there that came before them. I think that's where George Lucas got the Force ghosts from Star Wars from.
Okay, that makes sense.
I think so. That's I have no I'm just talking out of my ass here,
I mean,
but
if that's where he got his inspiration for Star Wars, then that would make sense.
yeah, I mean, because you gotta think in I guess in the first like in episode four, like
Which
Obi-Wan's
one's
talking to
one's for? That's
A New Hope.
okay.
That was the oldest one.
I always get them mixed up with it being like the newer ones being the first ones, and then the
Yeah. But
okay.
like the oldest one, Obi-Wan talks to him from the grave. And then he actually sees him in episode five. So I don't know. It makes sense to me. Like Paul being able to commune with all of his ancestors. Yeah, I came up with that just like I was reading late at night one day and I was like, holy shit, it's a Force ghost.
That's like what I was thinking last night. So that's kind of that's. I mean, I didn't know that up until you just said that. So.
Yeah. Have you? So I got this vibe a lot, and I know I'm jumping ahead to the movie, but
Yeah, I know. I keep like kind of refraining from trying to talk about it
yeah,
because I'm wanting to talk about it a little bit, but
we got to get through the book first. But
yeah,
so
I know.
in the book, it came across heavy, but especially in the second movie. Have you seen Lawrence of Arabia, the movie from like the 60s?
No.
Do you know anything about Lawrence of Arabia?
You might have told me about it, but I don't remember if you did. I do. I that name sounds familiar, so more than likely you said something about it, but I don't remember.
So I think that's where Frank Herbert got his inspiration, kind of.
Okay.
Because it's about a dude from England going to Saudi Arabia and like during, I think it's World War One. And he basically starts living with the Bedouin tribes and they take on the Germans in North Africa.
Okay.
That might be World War II. I don't know. It's a
Well,
World
no,
War.
that would be World War II then. It was Germans in North Africa.
Hold up. I'm gonna look that up. Just
That's
don't
World War II.
mind.
Because I don't think they
Lawrence.
went into Africa during World War I, unless I mean, I could most definitely be mistaken.
Lawrence of Arabia. No, it was World War One. No, it was the Ottomans that
In
were
Africa.
invading. Yeah.
There's a
But
lot of
so
invasions of
it's
Africa.
about this white guy basically living with these Arab tribes and leading them to liberate themselves. And there's a lot of parallels with it, but I think that's where Frank Herbert got his inspiration for. And then that led to Star Wars. So Star Wars is based on Lawrence of Arabia.
Okay. So it's like it just kind of keeps going.
Yeah, but also, I'm pretty sure Star Wars is like George Lucas said Star Wars is based off Vietnam.
Really?
Yeah, so the Empire is the United States and the rebels are the Viet Cong.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's
Oh, damn.
crazy.
Damn, I didn't realize it was that deep.
Yeah, well, because
Okay.
he came out in I think it was like in the 90s. Someone asked him like, "So is this based on World War II?" And he said, "No, it's Vietnam."
No shit.
Yeah.
Okay, that's kind of cool. I mean, I guess, but I mean, I didn't realize the movie's got that. He went like that deep with the whole concept of it.
Yeah, he's a weird guy.
I knew that. I knew
He,
that. I
yeah,
knew he was
he,
an interesting person, an interesting guy.
yeah, him and Frank Herbert's a weird dude. guy that
I've
wrote
heard
all.
that. I don't know as much about him, but I have heard that.
Apparently, in book four, someone turns into a worm.
In the fourth Dune book? So when did he stop making those books?
I think he wrote them until book five.
And then he died, right?
Yeah, and then his son took over after that. And apparently, they just went downhill from there.
I mean, of course.
But yeah, oh, so, you know, what can you do?
I mean, did you read past
No,
three?
I almost, I didn't finish three. Things got really weird, and I just wasn't in the mood for it. I want to come back to it.
Mean, that's what kind of sucks. I mean, I really truly enjoyed the first book.
Yeah. So I want to talk about that after we talk about the second movie, because I'm concerned about how they're going to do the third movie.
See, I have some. Yeah, we'll talk about it. But I have some stuff I was thinking about with the third movie and the way that this, what's his name that directed it? Great director, great director.
Denis Villeneuve,
Yeah. So
Villeneuve, I think is how he says it.
I have some theories that he's going to take some leeway with the third movie,
He's gonna have
because
to big time.
at least from what you've told me about Messiah, the second book. And him only planning on doing three movies with this, he's definitely going to take some leeway with it and make it kind of take a spin on it.
Well, he's gonna have to, because we'll talk about that after the second movie, because I can ramble about that for a while. So let me just run down some points, some like really cool things about the book, and then we can go into the movie. So my favorite thing about the book, hands down, is it's written in an omniscient third person, where the narrator of the story knows everything and can read everyone's mind. So as you're reading it's not from Paul's point of view, it's from everyone's point of view at the same time.
So
So
that, yeah.
it'll, like, one paragraph to another, you'll be in Jessica's point of view, in her head, her thoughts, Paul's point of view, Chani, Gurney, every character has their point of view and all of their thoughts. And it's not chapter by chapter. It doesn't announce it. It's just as the story happens. Like when we're having a conversation, the book goes from when I say something, it talks about why, like what I was thinking about when I was saying it. And then when you respond, it goes into your brain.
Okay, yeah, at first I was kind of confused where you're going, like what that was, but yeah, no, you're right.
So, the way it's written fits with Paul's state of mind by the end of the book. The way
Yeah.
that he sees the world is how
That
the
makes
book
oh,
is
and that makes
written.
that makes so much sense now.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense now.
It's so
I never,
cool.
I didn't know that. So like I've like since I've read the book, I'm kind of like, that kind of threw me off a little bit because now that makes so much sense.
Yeah, and so the other thing is, like, each chapter starts with the print, like, so in the second movie, the princess does her little narrations that are in the book. Each chapter starts with one of her quotes, but the story itself is told how Paul would tell the story, since he knows everything, like he's like an omniscient being,
It's almost like
basically.
an Aaron Yeager from
Yeah, kind of.
Attack on Titan, kind
But Attack on Titan's told by Armin.
That's true. That's true.
And Mikasa's the main character.
Debatable. That's another conversation.
Yeah. So also one theme that I don't think was shown in the movies that's as big of a deal in the But it's a huge deal in the books, is like environmental conservation or conserving everything. So, like, spilling blood is a waste of water. And it's like if you kill someone and don't collect their water, like it's a waste. And then how like a big part of it is very like corporate, ex like corporates or corporations exploiting the environment. So like in the movies, they don't talk about this at all, but like the Chome company, like the one that controls the spice.
I know what you're talking about.
So the books are all about the Chome company just destroying Arrakis.
Oh, is let me ask you this, because it's been what, 2 years since I read it. Is that the ones that were like the almost like the bankers in the book ish
Yes,
kind of like,
kind
but
of.
that's kind of how they kind of like explain them a little bit. They're more of like a banking kind of
Yeah, they're like a commerce guild, kind of.
All right. Just wanted to clarify on that before.
But yeah, so they're like in the books, they're kind of the true villain, and they're like not brought up at all in the movies, which I
Which,
understand because it's kind of
I mean, they're not
complicated.
like, I mean, it's not, I mean, that, and then it's not like, I don't feel like in the movies they can make that entertaining.
Yeah,
You know?
I think that's a lot of why these changes were made, is they were made for entertainment value. I
Like from a
mean,
book perspective, it
oh, it's
was
awesome.
great. It's great.
Let me see. Oh, so there's a part in the book where Paul gets lost in his like time visions, and he has to, you know, in Inception, when like they have like the totem, like the thing that they know that they're not in a dream.
Yeah, like little things they like carry in like their
Yeah.
pockets or something, like a little like a dice or something.
Yeah. So Paul uses people that have died as totems. So he's like, at one point, he gets lost in these visions. And I think it's like, I think he uses his son at some point. Like after his son dies, he gets lost in a vision, and his son comes up to him, and he's like, "Oh, thank God, this is just a vision. Like I thought this was real life."
I don't remember that.
Yeah, it was a really short section, but it kind of jumped out to me just because I was like, "That's just Inception." Paul was Leonardo DiCaprio getting lost in the sauce.
Maybe that's what I actually might actually remember that now that you say that. Maybe we talked about that when I was reading it at the time or
Yeah, because
something.
there's a lot of weird stuff in the book that it just kind of like it throws at you, and then it doesn't really bring it up again. Like it's just, it's weird. It's a lot of weird stuff. Speaking of weird stuff, so really this kind of I have a large point on here about how in the books, the Bene Gesserit are the bad guys. Like,
I mean, they make a little point of that in the movies a little bit, like especially in the second one, they definitely
yeah.
kind of hinted at like they're the ones kind of pulling the strings on everything.
Yeah, so I wish that they would have gone more into that, because the Bene Gesserit are a really cool villain, where like, so the whole thing about the prophecy and all of that, where it's like
There can be
they're,
multiple.
yeah, but they're also they make a prophecy, spread it around the galaxy, but then they shape the future. Like they pull the strings and shape the future to fulfill the prophecy. It's their prophecy, but they're also the ones that made it come about.
Well, see, like, let me ask you this, because this is what kind of confuses me a little bit. So, is it a real prophecy, or is it just them just spreading this shit to kind of like?
Well, so in the movie, that's what Paul asks. I think he asked his mom that.
The first or second, first movie?
And then in the second movie, he says, no, this is just a tale that y'all have told enough times to
Oh,
where
right.
you think it's a prophecy. And I tend to agree with Paul. It's not a real prophecy if it's just something that y'all said, oh, this will happen. And then you spend like 1,000 years making it happen.
Right. But I mean, at the same time, though, you got to think, though, Paul is all knowing at this point now, and he
Yeah.
does fulfill that pro. There hadn't been anyone before him that has been able to do that.
Right. Well, I mean, they said it would like the what is it? When he drinks the water of life, like any man would have died,
Right. And he
but
didn't.
he didn't die.
Yeah.
So like he is objectively, he is the guy. Like he is the chosen one. But is it because it was prophesized, or because the Bene Gesserit spent 1,000 years making it happen?
And the other question, I'm sure we'll get to this point at some point, but what there was a conversation we had last night after the movie that I completely forgot about that you told me about, the orgy.
Yeah.
Were there men not involved? Because I, dude, it's been so long since I've read this book, so I'm kind of like, there's a lot of things I don't remember. Did the men not? All right, I don't know if you want to go into this yet or not, but like, did the men not drink it in that?
No, so that's the whole thing. The orgy happens.
I don't want to. I feel like we're. I don't want to like jump too far ahead.
No, we can talk about it. I'll add it in part two, my notes. No orgy. Yeah, I'll add that in. No orgy, water of life. And that'll remind me what to say. Because that's a really interesting part of the book that changes everything. But yeah, so.
I mean, I remembered it once you explained it to me last night. But before you explained it, I did not remember that. But since we were talking about the water of life, I was kind of
Yeah, no, I that's and there's a lot of little things like that.
like kind of a gray area in the book, kind of.
No, it's pretty explicit, but like there's a lot of things that the movie took out, and I get why they did, kind of, but also to tell the story, like even though it seems insignificant, it's part of the process. But okay, so I have two more points, and then we can dive into the movies. Still on the Bene Gesserits, I in my notes, this is like I said, me. I was probably sleep deprived when I wrote this. The Bene Gesserit are basically space Nazis. Just
That's a take.
so okay, so and it's mainly based on their definitions of what counts as a human. So at the like when they do the Gom Jabbar or whatever it is, she's like, I'm testing if you're a human.
See, that threw me off a little bit, to be honest with
So
you. Yeah.
they're counting, like, they see themselves as true humans, and then everybody else aren't really humans.
All right, that makes sense. All right, I see where you're going with it then. I see where you're going with the little
Okay.
like
It
Nazi.
goes further. Their entire plan is based around eugenics.
Oh shit.
So. What the hell? Hold up.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Hold up. Let me. I'm gonna stop the recording. Hello, everybody. We just took a little break to refill drinks. I just picked up a bourbon. It's a Noah's Mill. Very good. I'm gonna give it two thumbs up. Very woody. It's hot. It's
Okay, it's
114%.
not for me then. That's not for me.
I put a lot of ice cubes in there.
I was about to say,
I'm
yeah.
gonna let that water down.
I'm glad I kind of like converted you on that a little bit because
Yeah.
the stuff that you used to drink when we lived together, man, I could not. I mean, there were sometimes where you would like, hey, try this, and you'd bring it downstairs, and I would like,
Land, I was a dumb college student at that time.
yeah, that's true.
I've grown.
You kind of you're kind of backtracking a little bit, to be honest with you.
No, I've grown as a man.
Okay. All right. What's the
So,
proof on it?
114.
That sucker's hot.
Yeah, it's hot. It's really good though. Yeah, this is what I was drinking when I was sick.
With the honey?
Yeah, I would mix this with honey, and
That's going to change the flavor profile of that
it
bourbon.
does. It's really good by itself. I'm drinking it just straight on the rocks, but when it's really hot like that, if you're sick, mixing a really hot bourbon with honey does amazing things to your body.
That makes sense though. That really does make sense though. Because like you think about like when you're really sick, what do you
Yeah.
usually drink? Like you'll drink like usually warmer or really cold things.
Yeah. Well, so my thing is, the doctor gave me promethazine. And I,
That's crazy, bro.
yeah. Well, so Liv got prescribed the same thing as me.
Where y'all going to the doctor at?
Dude, just the urgent care.
I need to start going to y'all's urgent care.
They're just like, here's promethazine. I
Whenever I'm
said,
sick, I'm just gonna start driving down, driving to y'all and going to y'all's urgent care.
dude, well, so the thing is, the promethazine, it made me like so out of it that I could not tell if I felt better or not. The thing is, with the bourbon and honey, I could still feel my body. So I was like, oh, I do feel a little bit better. But with the promethazine, people are like, oh, dude, do you feel better? I said, I have no idea.
I can't tell.
I can't tell. My boss called me and he was like, how are you feeling? I said, I have no idea.
Shit they're giving me is stupid.
Yeah.
That's funny.
But back to Dune streamlining. So, Lane, my first point is no orgy from what
Yeah.
we talked about earlier. So, in the book, here's.
I got a couple points I want to talk about the second movie.
Yeah, well, so the no orgy, I have a couple complaints. Well,
That's huge.
did we already give our ratings of Dune Part One?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we did. Okay. So, no orgy. And to people that have not read the book, that I'm sure that is confusing.
Yeah. Orgy.
Yeah, there is an orgy. So when Jessica drinks the water of life, and there's that whole thing about where her and her child join consciousnesses, whatever, right? So during that scene in the book, she changes the poison to a drug.
After she takes
So she takes it and then spits a little bit back in, and it changes the poison into a like a kind of hallucinogen, but not really. That's kind of,
it's almost diluted.
yeah, it's a
But I mean,
diluted
but like that, but
version.
that was another thing in the movie they didn't show that it showed because at the same time they're like Paul's mom, like they did make a point of doing this in the movie. Paul's mom as a Bene Gesserit can manipulate poisons and everything else.
Well,
So,
but so in the movie though, she drinks it
and
in
then
the just the women of the ruling women, like in the Reverend Mother's room, she drinks it. In the book, she drinks it in front of the entire siege. Like
Yeah,
it's,
right. Yeah.
and so she takes a sip, spits a little bit back in, changes it into a drug, and then everybody takes a sip. And it's supposed to, like, it basically it joins their emotions and their thoughts together. And it's like we all feel as one once we drink this. And then they have an orgy. So a lot, since they did not do that, that I think is the start of the like the dominoes that changed the story, because a lot of things happened during that scene. One, Paul gets a wife that is Jameis's wife. He gets Jameis's wife and children
And
during
that,
that.
but that was also from him killing Jameis. And but that's like a cultural thing. Like whenever you kill somebody like that, you inherit everything. You inherit their
Yeah.
business, you inherit their wealth, you inherit, and you inherit their family, which is strange. But yeah,
So,
you inherit their family.
but also the my issue with the movie, how it plays it, is when Paul shows up to the siege, there's people saying like, "Get out of here, you're an outlander." In the book, he's welcomed because they're saying, "Oh, you're walking with Stilgar. That means that you're one of us." And then they get told, "Oh, he killed Jameis." They say, "Oh, okay, well, here's your wife, here's your kids, here's your house. You're a part of our family now." In the movie becomes like it's more of a story about Paul earning his place within the Fremen. In the book, the Fremen accept him willingly.
And that's the thing that kind of bothered me about the movie, and to an extent, like I get they're trying like a theatrical stance or whatever on it, but at the same time, though, I feel like that could be good theatrically, just as good as him having to,
Well, it's a different
prove
story.
himself. Exactly. So, like, I mean, like I truly believe that like the way that that goes in the book could be a, it could be a great theatrical story in itself, but.
Well, the move.
They want to take their own little, and that's what bothered me. They wanted to take, I don't want to like get like on like a rant here, but like they wanted to like, it seemed like he wanted to take his own little spin on it.
Well, so my thing is the movie changes things to be more of a typical movie story.
Right, and that's what like I want something different in a movie, and like
Yeah.
that would like, 'cause like now that I've seen God knows how many movies now, I want to see something different. I mean, I know the basic, story lines that you're hearing all the damn time, and I want something different. So like the movies that get me excited now when I see them coming out are movies that I have not, something that I haven't seen, and I feel like this would be kind of a different little storyline or a different little take on how a main character is accepted into a like a society like this, you
Well,
know?
because like I'm there's so many movies where an outsider has to
Prove himself.
prove himself, but in the if you go by the book, he doesn't have to prove himself. Like the whole him riding a worm, Paul does not have to ride the worm to prove himself.
He already has.
Yeah, he's
He
already.
makes a point to do it himself. He wants to do it.
Yeah, he wants to do it because he says, "Even the Fremen children have done this, so I must do it." But everyone, like
Everyone,
Chani.
it wasn't just Stilgar. It wasn't just Chani. Everyone was like, "You don't have to do this. We already accept you. You're already one of us. You don't have to do this."
He was accepted from day one.
Right. Yeah.
As soon as he killed Jamis, they said, "You are part of our family now. We accept you." And as soon as his mom became the Reverend Mother, they said, "We accept you both. You don't have to do anything more to prove it to us." And instead, they changed the movie to where he rode the worm to prove it to them that he could.
Well, I mean, he was like, if you, well, in the movie, they, I mean, he was a little bit of accepted before he went.
I don't know, like it was
Because,
just
like,
like
he got respect in the movie whenever he blew up, whenever he helped Chami and everything blew up, like, blow up the chopper and all that stuff when they were blowing up that little spice rig.
yeah, but like he didn't have to do any of that because they accepted him as family.
From the start, and that's a huge thing for the Fremen standpoint in the movie. I
Yeah.
feel like that would build a huge, like, not like a huge, but it would build like a picture of what the Fremen are, like it, like in their society and the way that they, you know, how they carry and conduct themselves as a society. That would. It would build their storyline a little bit in the way that they are, I feel like.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think so.
Because, like, as of right now, say I did not read the book, I know nothing about it, and I go watch these two movies. To be honest with you, what do you really know about the Fremen?
Really nothing.
Exactly. And
They care about
that,
water.
yeah. And that's like the whole thing. Like in the book, you get a full picture of them and their society, their religion, everything. In the way that they do things. In the movie, it's just kind of like, oh, we care about water. Yes, we have some religion towards certain
Or
things,
some of us have religion,
and the other
but
ones don't. And
John.
that was huge because the North did believe in it in the book.
Yeah. The North, here's the thing, Lane. It doesn't make sense from the movie perspective either, because the Northerners are the ones that greeted Paul and them at the landing site and
Not the
called.
Southerners. Yeah, not the Southerners. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's who Duncan Idaho met with.
Yeah, he met with the Northerners
But in the
and.
movie, they're like pictures of this like radical unit that's not religious and all this other stuff. And then the South are this real like uber religious group that they don't even associate with. You know, like, and then
So,
in the home, that was one thing like I know I'm kind of jumping ahead on the second movie, but like when Chani was like, I'm fighting for my people and what they want. And it's like in the book, all the Fremen are one kind of deal. Like it wasn't like I'm fighting for my people and you Southerners are stupid to think that all this other stuff is like.
yeah, I too. So, okay, Lynn, I'm gonna also for everyone that's listening, I told Land last night that I had a really good point
I
about
told
this movie.
I told you not to tell me, yeah.
So I'm gonna tell you right now, Land, my really good point about this movie is about Chani. The entire reason why I could not buy into this movie is because of the character of Chani, how she was portrayed. And I think Zendaya did a great job. It's about the writing.
No, I agree. No, I completely agree. Because that was one thing. Like, I didn't tell you about this. I had a talk with Jacob on the way home. Not the one that watched the movie with us. The other Jacob.
Yeah.
And I was talking to him on the way home. I was like, the whole Chani character is fucked. It was like it was terrible. Like, you know, I mean, she did great. Like the movie. Like if you were to not read the book and you watch the movies,
She's a great
awesome. It's
character.
awesome. Great character. And it's a great. You know, it was awesome. But if you go based off the book, that is terrible. It's
So,
terrible.
man, I connected the dots. I had an amazing idea. So, do you remember how a couple weeks ago I was telling you I don't know how they're going to do the second part of the book because most of it is Paul arguing with himself.
Yeah.
So, in the movie, Paul doesn't argue with himself. Do you know who he argues with? Chani. Chani took over Paul's inner voice for the movie. In the movie, everything that Chani says is something that Paul's inner voice says in the book. So when any time that she's saying something like, you're just using the Bene Gesserit religion to control these people, that's what Paul says to himself in the book. Because her character becomes a, so let me see this. So she leaves him after he takes the poison. Once he assumes his actual power, she leaves him. Just like in the book, as soon as he takes that poison, his inner voice starts to leave, where he's like freaking out about everything that's going on. It kind of starts to, go down.
Starts to mellow
She leaves right at that point. Also, there's a big point in the book where Paul is voicing his concerns about controlling the Fremen through Bene Gesserit superstition. Chani is the only one that says that. In the books, Paul is the only one that says that. Chani and Paul in the book have a child that
This
dies.
was huge. This was
So
huge. This was huge.
they have a whole ass child. They are a loving family.
When the thing, home, let's just stop real quick because even before they had a child, they were very exclusive in the book. Like it was very obvious that they were together, right? And in the movie, it's all the way up until the end of the movie, it's like,
It's a will they, won't they? That's the thing, is it turns into like, oh, so this kind of pissed me off, is that
that was one of my biggest things in this.
the movie turns it into a, like, it's almost like a romance subplot. Like, are they gonna work out? Are they not? Paul says they
This
will.
just that that's like a stereotypical theatrical stance on this.
Yeah, I hate it because in the books, they are together, they're a family, they understand each other because they were in the orgy together. They both skipped out on the orgy to go sit down together and talk. And when he told her everything, she said, I know, I can see into I can see into your head right
She's
now.
like, I can see your soul pretty much.
Yeah, I can see your soul. I know that's what you think. And then from there on, they were almost like one. Like, they were like the same person because of that one conversation where they legitimately like joined their souls together. They had a baby. The baby dies when Siege Tabor is destroyed.
So let's just give a little bit of context. So if you do watch the movie, the scene where there's a lot of a ship goes over their the Northerners hideout, or what other word would you call it? Not a hideout, but a
When the ship, it starts
is the, is
shooting
the is it the
missiles at a
commune
rock.
or wherever where everyone's living, right? And they're
Yeah, it's
just
the Siege.
they just start blowing it up, right? And then the only thing you hear about is, oh, all of our friends have died, all this and that. That is such a huge part in the book because their child dies. That is what makes Paul be like, okay, we're gonna accept what we're going after
Yeah,
now.
we're gonna
It
fucking lock in.
wasn't just because in the movie he goes and takes the water of life or whatever it is after
Yeah.
that. No.
No. So the thing is, Paul seeing his child die and Chani seeing their child die,
Pushed them over the edge. It pushed no,
that.
it pushed Paul over the edge. Chani was already ready for it, I feel like.
Well, so, but that's the whole reason that Paul gives into the prophecy.
Right, because beforehand he was hesitant on it. He didn't want it. He
No,
didn't
Lynn, he was willing to kill himself
before he
to
accepted it.
stop it.
Yeah.
He said, when Stilgar says, we need to fight to prove who's the leader, Paul sits there and says in the book, I should let him kill me so this doesn't happen. And then his child dies and he says, fuck it. We're diving into the prophecy.
But then in the movie, it was after he took the life of water and he's in the south with what? The entire Fremen group.
Yeah,
And then
but
Stilgar stands up then and is like, kill me. And he's like, no, we'd be better off doing this together.
yeah,
And it's
and
just like, I don't know. That was also like, don't get me wrong, it is a fantastic movie.
if you
But
don't know what
but
happens.
yeah, if you don't read the book, but I mean if you've read the book and you're like you go into this movie and you're just like it'll throw you off a bit.
But so the whole, so this is my thing is that
That's why I'm trying to convince Jacob to read the book. Because I'm like, you need to read the book to actually get a full understanding. Because he's all gung-ho about, oh, this is that it's all and he's like trying to talk to me about the movie, and I'm like, because at the same time I'm like, that's not what happened. And I'm like, I'm
yeah.
trying to explain that to him, and it's just like that's not what happened.
Well, so I think, I don't know. My thing is, this is my big point about like the second movie. I didn't want to dive into this yet, but I will. It's less of, so in the book, you get a very distinct sense of Paul is slipping into the prophecy because certain things happen and he makes a gut decision where he's like,
Yeah.
my child just died. I want to kill Harkonnens.
Right. Yeah.
And he's like, oh shit, that just led me further into the prophecy. Because he can see the prophecy the whole time. And he's like, I don't want to do this because I know billions of people are going to die. And at the whole time, he's thinking, I should kill myself. I should kill everybody. I should kill myself. And it's just bouncing back and forth. But then these things happen to him, and he makes a gut decision, and then he's just further in the prophecy. The movies make it seem like more of a hero story, whereas the books are more of a tragic story.
Right, because Chani is full blown losing her shit in the book.
Well, yeah, Chani is a tragic heroine in the books. In the movies, she is a cynical non-believer. But that's also that my thing about Chani being Paul's inner voice. Paul is a cynical non-believer to himself in the books. Chani takes over that in the movie. So it's really hard because to make the movie make sense, I don't know how you make Paul a reasonable character because in the book, most of the book is him arguing with himself.
Yeah.
So you need someone to be a counterpoint to him. I don't know if Chani was the best choice.
I don't think so.
I think Gurney would have been a better choice.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know who else I, but now, like, I don't know who else would have been though, besides Gurney.
I don't know, but Chani, I think her character needs to be the way that she is because it sets up like so, especially when you're gonna do the third movie. Fuck, I'll go ahead and say it. The third movie is built on Chani's undying love for Paul. That is the basis for the third movie.
And then the second movie sets it up like Chani's like, fuck you, Paul, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't understand it.
And like that was a huge thing about the ending too, was like Chani knew that what Paul was gonna do. Chani knew that Paul was going to make a play for the hand of the like for the emperor's daughter. She knew that, and she accepted it because when Paul said, I will love you till my last breath, he told her that when they were together and was like, you know what I'm gonna do. And she goes, are you still gonna love me? And then he told her that and was like, I will be with you regardless. This is just to get us where we need to be, you
Yeah,
know,
it's
like and that, I don't know, like that's huge in my opinion. Like you could have kept, like I get where they're going theatrically, but like you could have kept that way, and I would have been just as into it, you know. Like,
Yeah. Dude, I
but
don't
they're,
know.
but I feel like they're going the typical movie route. Like,
Well,
and don't get me wrong, I love the movie, but I think they're going the typical movie route of this typical like step by step. This is what you do in these little like love shit situations in movies.
so Land, I think the issue is the book took a traditional theatrical approach to it, where Paul and Chani are tragic heroes, you know, like from Shakespeare, like tragic hero. So Paul and Chani are both tragic heroes where they have a certain trait that brings them down. Chani is her tragic trait is her love for Paul. She'll do anything for Paul. She's like, it's almost an obsession. Paul, his tragic trait is it's almost like a, don't know, like empathy, where he's so empathetic that it tears him apart. But the movie takes all of that away, and Paul isn't a tragic hero anymore. He's a normal Hollywood hero where he has this great destiny in front of him and he's doing whatever it takes to get there. And Chani is almost a like a sub antagonist where she's saying, no, I'll do anything to stop you from doing this. And it I think it takes the nuance away from their characters. Because without Paul being the one that's arguing against himself, he seems almost more in tune with let's do the intergalactic like jihad, you know? You don't get the sense that he is totally opposed to it. You have one scene where he's, or two scenes, sorry, where he's complaining about it. And that's it. The rest of the movie, he's just like, yeah, let's do it. But Chani, all of Chani's lines from the movie are supposed to be him,
And
like,
I feel like they could have used Chinese lines that she actually had in the book, and it would have been great. I would have loved it.
because
I mean,
Chani's.
hold on, how many movies, like, and then again though, how many movies have you heard that have inner dialogue?
Oh, A lot.
There's a good amount that have inner dialogue where if you really wanted to have Paul's inner dialogue, you could have easily had it in this.
Yeah, because it ch that
Because there,
intrinsically changes his character.
because there are multiple points where you could have just, while they're having conversations, have Paul thinking, and it just, you're hearing his conversation. Yes, you're
Yeah.
hearing their conversation at the same time, but you're mainly hearing what he's thinking. And you could have done that multiple times in the movie. And
I don't think they should have taken Chani's character
no,
because
because they completely changed her character. She's a completely different character now.
mean, but it completely changes Paul's story too. And that's the thing is his whole character is built off of loving Chani and trying to be the provider for her. And without that, it seems like he is buying into the jihad. Like he's saying,
And what his mother kind of wants too at the same time, because
yeah.
she really doesn't really want Chani in the picture.
No.
And
Well,
she, well, no, she does, but at the same time, she knows that she's the concubine of the situation.
yeah. She's looking at Chani as you're gonna be the concubine until the last battle scene. And that's a major thing. So in the movie, when she's like, I hope like good luck today or whatever, and Chani says, like, yeah, fuck you, good luck today. In the book, that is the first time when Jessica looks at her and says, like, basically, like, I approve of you as my daughter-in-law. That is a major moment where it's like, I approve of you too. Like, I don't care about the imperial court. Like, you are my son's wife, and I hope that everything works out.
And that was another thing too. They kind of portrayed his mom a little bit differently as well.
But I agree how they portray his mom. From rereading the book, they portray his mom as a pure villain.
Oh, I never liked her. I never liked her, to be
No,
honest with you. But at the same time, though,
no, when
she
that
did
binds.
do that, and she did do a couple other things. But
We talked about for like 30 minutes about how the Bene
yeah, when
Gesserit
she
are
became the Reverend
Nazis.
Mother, it was just like, ah, she's kind of a bitch.
Yeah, like the Bene, like she is so indoctrinated into the Bene Gesserit, where like she is the bad guy. She is the evil one in the movie. And I don't know, she's like my thing is Jessica is the one that causes the jihad. She
She
is
is.
the she's the reason why billions of people die. And in the movie, the billions of people dying, it's kind of shown as almost like a comedic thing where it's like, yeah, let them fight. And it's like people in the theater laughed. Like,
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that. I was kind of like, I remember like looking at you and being like, what the fuck?
so, like, when Stilgar is getting more and more like radicalized, which doesn't happen in the book,
No, not at all.
but when he's getting more and more radicalized, people in the theater were laughing. And it's the thing is, I'm not going to blame the people in the theater because the movie shows it as a comedic thing. Like the way it is shot, it is comedic.
Oh, without a doubt, without a
It's
doubt.
a funny moment. That is the basis for billions of people dying. That's the whole thing. The whole point of the story is Paul being terrified that would happen And the movie plays it off as comedic. And like the thing is, I think the movie by itself is great, but when you bring in the context of what actually happens in the book, it does, like, I don't think the director understood the book.
I don't either. I mean, based off the second movie, I don't think.
I don't think he did because
Or either that, or he's taking his own spin on it. Because I mean, you gotta think about where that third movie's going.
Ooh.
Because at the same time, though, he says he's only making one more movie after this. That's gonna be the final movie. And
Yeah.
he's trying to take this a certain way. And which, I mean, I respect. He's thinking this is the best theatrical way to do it. But at the same time, though, for people who've read the book.
So, hold on. We're gonna take another break. Okay, so that conversation ends up being about 2.5 hours long. So this is editing Josh talking. We're actually going to split this into our first two-parter on the Literary Weapons podcast. So we're going to end it right here and then come back next week for part two, where we ramble on about Dune Part Two for 1.5 hours. It gets very interesting, I will say that. But yeah, so tune back in next week. Thank you.